Welcome to Samba Soccer Radio, episode 1. I'm Jay Withers, and I'm here with
Imran Muhammad.
Excited to do episode 1 and break down the U.S. men's national team game against Wales. I know we have been waiting for this for over a year, especially these past couple weeks with the players called up and the lineups. So super happy to be here with you today, Imran.
Yeah, same here, man. I've been excited to actually watch this game yesterday. It felt weird. It felt like we're watching like a World Cup qualifying game. It was just a friendly, but no, it was exciting to finally get to watch them.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've been seeing a lot of these U.S. men's national team players grow a lot in MLS and in Europe, and they finally were able to come together today. And I know Greg Berhalter. This game was originally scheduled to be played in March, so there were a lot of players who were coming on the scene that we were looking forward to, like Gio Reyna, Tyler Adams finally being healthy. Christian Pulisic had a huge breakout year at Chelsea, but we weren't able to see these guys play and come together in March. So it was really cool seeing them come together, even though it was in November. All things considered, I'm glad we got to see our team play during the pandemic.
Yeah. It was well worth it. I mean, even though it was 0-0, I think we can all take out something beneficial, something great that came out of this game. And we'll definitely talk about that going in this episode today.
Yeah, absolutely. And so before we jump off into the episode for new listeners, we'll kind of introduce ourselves, kind of how we got into the game, why we decided to talk about the game. Obviously, we love it so much, but just a little bit of background. So I'll go ahead and start. So I'm Jay Withers. I basically got into soccer because of the 2002 World Cup. My dad was working late, came home around 2, and I woke up, of course, want to go see your parents and hang out. The TV was on, and I noticed soccer was on TV, and I was just like, huh, this is a weird time for sports to be playing. And it was Poland was playing in the 2002 World Cup, which was hosted in Japan and Korea. And I don't know who they were playing. I just remember Poland was playing. And I just couldn't stop watching the game. I was mesmerized by the huge green field on the TV, the ball moving around. And like, as someone who was not into soccer and didn't understand the game, I was just like, why are they stopped running? Like they could keep getting the ball if they just continued to run. And I didn't really understand the dynamics and the patterns of play of soccer, but I couldn't keep my eyes off the TV, off the game. And so then my next step for me was getting a FIFA game. Yeah. Like if you were born in America, that's probably the way. If you got into soccer early in the early 2000s, it's probably one of the reasons why you got into the game. So I had like FIFA 2004. You had Ryan Giggs on the cover. I think Thierry Henry and Edgar Davids. Couldn't put FIFA down. Played that for a couple years. And then in 2005, ESPN bought rights to the Champions League. And so by then I was already hooked as a Manchester United fan, and it was only uphill from there. So that's kind of been playing the game since probably 2003, 2004. Joga Benito was big promo for the 2006 World Cup. Ronaldinho, Robinho, all of those guys, Ronaldo, Roberto Carlos. And so that's kind of how I'd like to play. But yeah, I would say 2002 World Cup, Manchester United, and the 2002 and 2006 Brazilian national teams got me hooked, and I've never looked back since.
My story is, I pretty much come from a country that the two sports that they play nationally is rugby and soccer. So I was born in Fiji, played soccer since I was 5. You know, I mean, that's the earliest that I can remember. Grew up playing around with my dad and their friends, grew up being an Arsenal and Brazil fan in my country. My country is not great at soccer, so you won't hear about them. That's why I gravitated more towards Brazil. I think pretty much in my country, everybody is either like an Argentina fan, Brazil fan, French fan. Mm-hmm. So I pretty much, I came to the States in 96, and I pretty much, that's the only sport that I love playing. It wasn't big here at that time. And I remember, for example, the 2002 World Cup, I remember staying up 1 a.m., you know, trying to catch a game with my dad and staying up late trying to watch it. And it's really beautiful to see how far we've come here in the States, where we have multiple games that we're able to watch, even how friendly it is to have the World Cups on our schedule that we're able to watch. So I pretty much played soccer since I was a kid, from clubs to high school. The dream was to play professionally, but that didn't work out. I think every kid's dream is to
that's all of our dreams.
Yeah. But one thing that I told you, Jay, was that at least I have a chance to talk about it now. My love for soccer has never died. Even living in the States, we have other sports that are bigger. Like I love American football. I love watching basketball. But I never really forgot about soccer, and I don't think I ever will. So doing this podcast is a way for me to kind of, you know, still play the game in a sense, you know, in a way to just kind of talk about it and still feel that nervousness you get before games. Cause I, like, before we started this today, I was like, oh man, this feels like we're, you know, we're about to, play a little bit.
Game time.
You know? So, yeah, I mean, that's a little bit about me. Hopefully, you know, what I want to get out of this is, you know, talk a little bit more about, you know, our love for the game and why we enjoy this game so much. And hopefully everybody else kind of feels that way, you know, while they listen to us.
Yeah. And I think the one thing that I'm getting from both of our stories is there's just something mesmerizing about the game that just clicked for us. So before we dive into the game, we both play. What position do you play?
I've always been a forward, but my favorite position to play is in the midfield. And it doesn't...
Okay.
Center midfield, I mean, I love watching Iniesta and Xavi. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was, I think, my favorite duo to ever watch it. Mm-hmm. So I gravitated towards that. And I still do. I love playing that playmaker role. But I'm not saying I'm good at it, but I love playing.
Yeah.
I don't know. What about you?
Yeah. So I think, originally my two positions were the number 10 Ronaldinho role. The number 10, not number two, number 10 Ronaldinho role, where you have just the freedom to dribble around players and to kind of express yourself. But when I started playing in middle school around sixth grade, we didn't exactly have all the pieces, you know, to have us tall a team. So I played keeper, defensive mid, outside back, literally all the positions. And I ended up landing really loving defensive midfield, because that's the position where you can break up play. And if you see the space, you can bring the ball forward like a number 10. Mm-hmm. So I really loved those positions, with the forward position for a while. Wing position as well, but really a midfielder similar to yourself, like reading the play and then seeing what kind of magic you can produce on the ball, you know, once you've broken up the play and dribbled into the final third of the field. So I'd say midfield for me too.
Yeah, I think for me the toughest position was probably playing the wing position, because you constantly have to be up and down, you know, mm-hmm. And that was always kind of tough for me, but just seeing anybody in my team do that, I was like, man, I give you props for that, because playing, you know, playing offense and defense at the same time, you know, and that's what midfield is somewhat. But the wing position, mm-hmm. you know, you got to come back on those flanks sometime, and it's pretty tough.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. One thing I wish I realized about the winger position when I was younger is it's, you can make it more about timing than just running. Yeah. And, you know, when I was a kid, I don't know about you, I was just running up and down the field, and that was tiring. So I was just like, you know, I prefer like the diagonal runs and stuff like inside the pitch, where I'm not up and down all the time. And I can kind of see the play a bit more from like a 360 view. But yeah, anyone out there who is a winger or a forward, like, props to you guys.
Yeah, definitely. So yeah, you wanna jump into the game real quick and kind of go from there?
Yeah. So what we'll be doing today is essentially, talking about what we were looking for in the game, what actually happened in the game. We'll break down the first and second half, and then we'll essentially kind of cap it off with what are the strengths the USA brought to the table, what are the strengths Wales brought to the table, and what are the weaknesses of both teams, and then we'll kind of rate the players from the U.S. national team, basically on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being they did really, really well, and then kind of what we're expecting for the Panama game next week and going forward from the U.S. national team. So, Imran, I want to start off with you. What are some things that you were looking for to happen in the game?
For me, it was more about seeing the flow of the game, seeing how, especially the chemistry, they had short practice together. So,
Two days,
yeah. So it wasn't that, and they didn't have that much time to gel well together, you know. Which even in this game, I really love the ball movement. I know we were kind of sending texts to each other while during the game,
yeah.
And something, and I was telling you guys, I was like, I really love the ball movement. They knew what to do on the ball. They weren't timid. They had fun with it. And even after the game, some of the players were like, you know, it was a fun game. I think it was just nice for them to get out together and enjoy, mm-hmm. Enjoy finally playing together. This hype that's been building up, they finally got to kind of show it, even though, like I said, there was no score. But what I went into the game to see was that, you know, that ball movement, that chemistry, and yeah, some of these key players like Gio Reyna and Tyler Adams and Musa, and seeing how they play mm-hmm. together. I think for me, I really did enjoy watching this game.
Yeah, it was a fantastic game. And I think one of the reasons we were able to see that ball movement is we have footballers now.
Yeah.
Like, we don't have guys who are just the cream of the crop in MLS, which is a growing league, but we have guys who are in and have come through the ranks of European academies, like Conrad De La Fuente, Gio Reyna, Tyler Adams, Weston McKinney, Serginho Dest, who has essentially been the European academies in Holland, the Netherlands, since he was young.
Yeah.
So we have players who know how to play that style of football, and something that I was looking for in this game was cohesion, regardless of what style of football we were playing. And that's something that we definitely got. We saw a lot of players were comfortable on the ball, which we'll get into a bit later. But I was looking for cohesion, and I was looking for Berhalter to execute a successful game plan. And even though the game was 0-0 and we didn't get that win, Berhalter, I think, overall was pretty successful in what he was trying to do.
Yeah.
I'm less concerned about the players now and more concerned about the coach. I know that's a talking point we'll get to in a future episode, but I was just looking for the players to look competent on the ball, comfortable doing what they're doing. And I think we saw that this game. Berhalter was saying in a press conference this past week that they only had 2 days in camp and that he was not going to try to overwhelm them with a bunch of tactics and patterns of play. But just kind of give them simple principles. And that's something that I was looking for in the game, and something that we saw pretty clearly.
Yeah. I mean, I know you had kind of said about them pressing, and I think they did that well, especially the midfield. When they pressed up high, they made Wales make bad decisions, and they almost scored.
Oh, yeah.
They almost scored on a few of those. But that was really fun to see. Like, watching US for such a long time, I haven't really seen that. And I think that goes credit to Berhalter, because that's what he wanted to do, you know, and that's what he wanted to install, and they did a really great job. And that's something I want to see against Panama a little bit more, and hopefully they progress in that, because that's where I think this the future and everything is going to go towards that.
Yeah, I was overall impressed with what Berhalter was able to do with not only his selection, but with the type of soccer that we were able to play against Wales. So this is a very, very detail-oriented, methodical coach. He definitely spends time watching all of his players, because you could see we have a lot of players who are good at pressing the ball. We have a Tyler Adams. We have a Weston McKennie. We have a Sebastian Legette, who are decent pressing players and know what to do with the ball after they've pressed and won it back. Mm-hmm. So Tyler Adams playing for RB Leipzig and in the Bundesliga in Germany, I think the quintessential pressing team in the world. If there's one team that you think about when you think about pressing, it's probably the Red Bull and RB Leipzig. Weston McKennie is a pressing type of destroyer player himself.
Yeah.
And Sebastian Legette has that work ethic. So you could see all of those players have the freedom or the instruction to do that in the game. You also saw Serginho Dest had essentially a free role on the right side of the pitch. Like, he was able to get up and down, show flicks and tricks that he does, similar to the way he plays in Barcelona. But you also have players like Gio Reyna have plenty of time to get on the ball. Yunus Musa, Anthony Robinson get up and down the flanks and play balls inside the middle. And so I think overall it was a really great game. And one thing that I don't want to discount is the Wales national team. Not a European powerhouse, but have players who play in the English Premier League. I mean, you had Dan James come off the bench for Manchester United, Daniel Levitt, who's a Manchester United player on loan at Charlton Athletic, Harry Wilson, a Liverpool player. Like, you had a decent squad in here that was able to give the USA a good challenge.
Yeah, I was just surprised at how well the US kept possession. You know, they had, I mean, I believe they had, you know, around 60-35 possession percentages against Wales, but that was something that was really cool to see. I'm used to watching, you know, like a tiki-taki football, you know, like the Spanish mm-hmm. football, where the possession, they, you know, for example, Barcelona or the Spain team, right? They keep the possession really well against teams. You know, they constantly pass, and in the beginning of the game I saw that. I saw US were just, you know, short passes, and I was like, okay, this is what I wanted to see. But it's something that you were speaking about, all these players, they're playing in clubs that give them confidence, right? They're not
absolutely
you know, and not to discredit MLS, but these are big clubs and big leagues. And a player like, for example, Sergio Dest, like, he plays for Barcelona. That confidence that he brings from Barcelona, it shows when he was playing on the field.
You know, 100%.
You know, so, I think he was probably the player of the match. Just the way that he was playing, the balls he was putting into the box, I just wish they would have played his side a little bit more, because I think Gio Reyna wasn't, he looked good. Not that he played bad, but I think mm-hmm. he was still trying to find himself in that role that he has with Dortmund, because he was trying to figure out, okay, when to go in or when to stay wide. Mm-hmm. There was a moment in the first half where he switched from the right side to the left side. So I think he's still trying to figure things out, and I mean the kid's only 18, and it there's so much talent there, and it's just going to be fun to watch. I do feel like this game did miss a striker. I know we kind of talked about that offline. So that's what I want to also see in the next game, is can they get a true striker, and somebody in there that can actually attack. And yeah, that, you know, ultimately, I feel like that's what's going to be the change in the next game against Panama.
Yeah. And I want to go back to one thing that you said that I liked is, we have players at European clubs who are letting the players play in the roles that they're best suited for, but also they have coaches who know what roles the players will succeed in. And I think that Greg Berhalter took that to heart and played all of our players in positions that they're not only comfortable with, but they have specific qualities that they excel in, mm-hmm. whether it's pressing, doing on and off the ball work, playing out wide, having the freedom of, I mean, Conrad De La Fuente was, I wouldn't say he was a star, but he had a solid game on the left wing where he was able to receive the ball into open space, do any tricks or flicks on the ball to get around his man. I saw a couple times he was able to beat the left back or the midfielders, the right back or the right sided midfielders from Wales, and kind of get in behind. But one of the things that I do want to say is we also have players at clubs who know how to develop. I mean, like Tyler Adams going through the Red Bull system, he's been playing the same style essentially since he was, 16, 17 years old. Yeah. So he's been able to harness and develop these skills, especially the defensive tackling ability and ability to press and get up the field and pop up in positions in the final third. Same with Sergiño Dest. But we were missing a forward. So for listeners who may not be as familiar with some of the players, Sebastian Lletget is a number 8 or number 10 playing for the LA Galaxy, who was played in a false 9 role. So his job wasn't necessarily to get on the end of crosses, but to kind of drop deep, link up play, as well as pull Wales center backs with him to kind of create chaos so that Gio Reyna and Conrad De La Fuente could get him behind. But also, there was a little bit of an issue with that because Sergiño Dest was getting up the right side a lot. Mm-hmm. And he put in a few great crosses. And we didn't have a striker, so we didn't have anyone with that instinct to get on the end of those. And I think that's one of the reasons we didn't score, because I'd say out of both the halves, the first half was a lot better than the second.
Yeah, I think the second half was, and some of the players spoke about this after the game, was that they were kind of going back to their tactics at their clubs because they only had 2 days of practice, right? So they didn't have that long to work together to build on tactics. So they started going back to what they know at their clubs. Like, for example, I think Tyler Adams did this in the first half, I believe. He sprinted from all the way from like from his box to all the way to the the keeper, from Wales keeper, and the keeper made a bad decision. But that's what they do at his club team, and mm-hmm. and they were like, you know, to conserve his energy. But I mean, what is he hasn't really worked that much with the tactics from Borchalter, so he's gonna revolt back to his club tactics, right? So that's something that hopefully in this next game that we also see that the building of what Borchalter wants from these players is more ingrained in them, so they can gel better together. But I don't know, overall I did feel like the first half was a lot better, a lot smoother. It looked like they were getting a little frustrated in the second half, but I mean the weather wasn't as great either, so it was it was raining and stuff. So but yeah, and other than that, I think the game went well.
Yeah. And I think to your point, Tyler Adams making that long bursting run up to the goalkeeper, even if it wasn't something that Greg Berhalter had worked on in practice with him and he kind of just went back to his club patterns of play. I think overall in the first half, we made Wales make bad decisions. Mm-hmm. And I felt that was a success. We were able to move the ball around. And just before we dive in anymore, I just wanted to kind of give an overall lineup of like how we lined up against Wales and how they lined up against us. So we had Zach Steffen in goal. I think he's kind of the undisputed number one right now. What would you say?
I agree. I mean, I think, and he had some great saves. There was chances where Wales off a mistake by our midfield was that should have scored, but I mean, he was there. He was there to do a great save. So I think he's penciled in for a starter role with the team.
I agree. I hope we see Ethan Horvath, who is the backup at a Belgian club, Genk, right now. Mm-hmm. I hope we see him against Panama, but definitely Zach Steffen is the number one. Wales didn't have a lot of chances in the first half or the second half, but he was able to catch a couple on-target shots. So he was able to stay sharp, and glad to see Zach Steffen looking lively, even when he didn't have a lot to do in the game. So starting center backs, we had John Anthony Brooks, starting center back for Wolfsburg. Sometimes he is in and out of the team, but this guy looks solid all game. He was my man of the match. Yeah. He broke the lines with floating balls over the top. I don't know how many times this guy knew when to step into midfield when the ball, when Wales was on a counter. He's my man of the match easily. The way he's able to play the ball so comfortably, one touch, two touch from out of the back with linking up with Tyler Adams and Weston McKennie. I think he's the one of the reasons that the USA was able to circulate the ball so well from the back line, building out of the back to the front. I think John Brooks was one of those reasons. What did you like about Brooks' game?
I agree. I think one thing that I've always wanted to see with US is that back line play well. And this game, I was finally able to kind of see that. I mean, every time like Wales would have a counterattack or they would lose the ball in the midfield, the back line would come together really well. And I think that was because of Brooks. I think he has a very commanding presence in that back line. So, yeah, I do feel like that's somebody who should be a future at that position.
Yeah, yeah. And his center back partner was Matt Miazga, who I thought had a really solid game. He got caught out a couple times, picked up a yellow card, just kind of being out of position with Wales midfielders and forwards kind of just being able to blow past him. But I thought Miazga was solid. He's another he's a Chelsea player who's kind of been a journeyman in the form of he's been on loan essentially a lot and not played for Chelsea. But he is a solid, very dependable player who I think still has room to grow. But I think he worked really well with Brooks and was pretty competent playing one-touch soccer out of the back. So our fullbacks we had Anthony Robinson, left back for Fulham in the English Premier League, and Sergiño Dest on the right. What did you make of Anthony Robinson's performance? Did anything stick out to you? Was it average? What was
I did feel it was a little average. I don't know. I didn't feel like he played that well on the ball. I mean, how well Sergiño Dest played on the right side. I don't know. I you can't really compare them to. I mean, they are. I mean, Sergio plays for Barcelona, right? So I think his ability to play is a lot better than Anthony. But what I want to see is a replacement with maybe put Chris. Was it Chris Richardson? From Bayern Munich.
Chris Richards,
yeah. So I wanna have him put in that role. Or maybe move Dest to the left, and because Dest can play left and right, and then
okay,
that's my. I want to see how that chemistry will work because I don't think he played that well.
So not a lot of confidence in Robinson is kind of what I'm hearing from you.
Yeah,
that's a fair assessment. I feel like Anthony Robinson did have a 5 out of 10 game, and we'll rate the players a bit later. I think early on in the game, he was caught out a couple times defensively by Wales's attacking midfielder Matondo, who I think he plays in the Bundesliga. Actually, he plays for Schalke, actually, which is a bit of a dumpster fire, but really good at developing youth.
Yeah.
But Matondo was able to get the best of Robinson a couple times in the first half. But I did think Robinson grew into the game a lot more. I think he's really, I mean, he obviously has his pace. I think one of the things that I noticed that he's good at is he's able to look for options inside and not just the wing when he's on the ball. But I think his weaknesses really come when he's caught out of position.
Yeah.
In that one-on-one defending, he's able to recover with his speed for sure. But I think at the world stage, we don't necessarily need, we don't want players who are having to rely on their speed just to make up for everything. And I think he's getting a lot of game time at Fulham, but Fulham is also at the bottom of the Premier League.
Yeah.
So he doesn't exactly have the supports to grow right now. But I thought he did. I thought he had a decent game in the US jersey, but probably average.
Yeah. I do want to see a change in that position in the next game. And hopefully we get to see Chris Richards in there.
Yeah. So let's move to the midfield. So we had the three starting midfielders of Weston McKennie playing the more number 8 role, Tyler Adams, and then Yunus Musah, who is a really exciting quad national player, eligible to play for the USA, Italy, Ghana, and the English national team. What did you think of the midfield overall?
I think that was probably the highlight of the whole game. They definitely they moved the ball really well. McKennie shows that being at Juventus has helped him. I mean, the confidence he has on the ball. I think he has the chance to be kind of like the leader of this team, because there was a moment, I think it was in the 40th minute, and I forgot, one of us had, I don't know if it was you or Jesse, when we were talking, texting each other during the game, and they were like, they need to slow down the ball or then they'll score. And like in the 40th minute, McKennie kind of said this, you know, he kind of yelled at the players because they were moving the ball too fast. They were trying to speed up and attack too quick. And he was like telling his players, slow down the ball. And I think he can take that presence on where he can be a great leader for this team. Tyler Adams, again, I think playing that number six role, he needs to be in there. I think him being in that defensive midfielder role, I think is perfect. The way that he plays for his club team.
Oh yeah.
And the way that he played today too. He should be the future of that position. And then Musa, you know, everybody was praising him. Everybody was praising him even during the game and after the game. And I see why. Like, he does feel really calm during the game. Like, he did make, you know, some mistakes, losing the ball here and there. But overall, I think he had a great game. Being 17, they didn't really talk about him much. I mean, it was more like Gio, you know, during the game. But the way that he was moving the ball up, you know, just attacking, it was really nice to see, especially from the midfield, because I haven't seen a midfield that has played like that in a while for US. Not that I have never seen that. It's just been a while seeing a great midfield like that.
Yeah, Yunus Musa, 17-year-old starting for Valencia, has already scored in La Liga. Was absolutely bossing the midfield in that game. I think when I saw Yunus Musa play, I saw unlimited potential in the game. I saw a player who was extremely comfortable receiving the ball with his first touch, really great technical player, a player who knew where to be in the right positions to receive the ball. And one thing that I've noticed about a lot of men's national teams players in the past is they're kind of limited in what they're able to do. You see players who are able to receive the ball but don't have the technical ability to turn and open up their body and go. We saw that with Yunus Musa. He's a quick player. He's an athletic player, but also he's very, very, very technically sound. And I think in combination with Tyler Adams and Weston McKennie, both players who are applying their trade in Europe, I think the sky is the limit, and I think we only go up as a national team. One thing that I really liked and noticed from McKennie and Adams is Berhalter basically told them to rotate responsibilities. So a lot of the times in the game, I would see Tyler Adams pressing up into the final third of the field, and then you would see Weston McKennie slotting into that number six position. Mm-hmm. And they would continue to switch back and forth doing this. So it shows me both players are both comfortable going up into the attack, enjoying the attack, but also sitting deep as well, waiting to kind of take on players and break up attacks for Wales. Because Wales, we essentially pressed them to the point to where they weren't able to retain the ball a lot in the first half of the game. They were, I think, because Sebastian Lletget, and we'll get to him in a bit, isn't a pure forward, we weren't able to get on the end of a lot of chances, but we were able to move the ball comfortably in the midfield without producing any turnovers. And I think Weston McKennie being at Juventus, I think him being coached by Andrea Pirlo, one of the best midfielders to ever play the game, I think he's going to be given a set role, and he's going to be able to develop technically at one job instead of playing five positions at Schalke. I think Tyler Adams, one thing I didn't like about Weston's game, though, is you saw a lot of the times his passing was a bit limited or kind of went to the opposition when he would play a ball and it wouldn't go across, you know, to the man that it was going towards. I think Tyler Adams is the better passer out of the two. And I think Weston, which, like you were saying, does have that mentality, though. He is a captain. He is a man amongst boys or growing men. Yeah. And I think once Weston is able to technically have his game catch up to where he is mentally and as a leader, I think he's going to be a fine player and have a successful career. And I think he's a very positive influence on the national team.
Definitely. Weston, I think one of the things... one of the things that I feel like he shouldn't do during the game is trying to take on players close to that box. Yeah. I don't think he fits well at doing that. I do feel like he is a playmaker, playing for Pirlo is gonna make him an even better playmaker. Just knowing, because Pirlo, man, I used to watch him and he would pick out players from just midfield and just drop that ball in. Right in the box.
He's a maestro.
Yeah, man. It was amazing to see that. And imagine if, McKinney can be a version of Pirlo and that midfield. One of the things during the game, the commentators that I kept hearing, Weston McKinney's playing for, Pirlo, Ronaldo, and things like that. And they're getting praised for playing with these great players. I want it to be one day where it's the other way around, where these players are being praised for because other players are, playing with them, that's something that I hope to see with this squad. I want US to go towards more Europe players and things like that, because the development of them and the coaches there, is going to propel them more forward, I just see like Musa, for example, at Valencia. I mean, he left England to go play to get into the first team at Valencia.
From Arsenal.
Yeah. Right? So
left Arsenal.
And he knew this is the only way for him to progress. I mean, all these young US players that are in Bundesliga, right? Keep going to Bundesliga. Because that's where
they get to play.
Yeah, they get to play. They get to find success. Bundesliga is one of the top leagues in the world, right? You have Bayern Munich who dominated last year every single game they played, from Champions League to domestic league, right? So, I mean, this is only going to get better from us as long as our coaches kind of progress with the potential of our players, right? So that's where I feel like US will be looked at going forward. But yeah,
I think we I'm 100% with you. I think we should have an episode just dedicated to US national team development and where our coaching's at, where our players are at. But yeah, right before we move off the midfield, I think the last thing I want to say is all of McKinney, Adams, and Musa all looked on the same page. And I think part of that is because they are playing on teams where they are developed to have a certain soccer IQ, to be able to move fluidly in transition, to read when the game needs to slow down, even if the team isn't necessarily slowing the game down like you were saying that McKinney wanted to. He at least knows that that should be something that should be done in the game. And I think just we haven't had midfielders who were able to necessarily be really successful at going both ways. Either we usually had players who were either really good defensive midfielders or more offensive midfielders. I think the last time we had a player who could do both was Michael Bradley in his prime when he was playing in Europe for AS Roma. I think that was his peak. Mm-hmm. And we haven't had a player who was able to be a two-way player who was skillful on the ball, off the ball, breaking up play as we have in Adams, McKinney, and Musa. And now we don't just have Michael Bradley. We have three players whose trajectory is only
and
up.
I think Michael Bradley lost his position, just to put that in there. I think Keller Adams took his position.
I agree. I personally I don't necessarily want to see Michael Bradley starting for the US men's national team again. Not that he doesn't have something to provide. I think his technical ability is still there. I don't know if he has the energy levels to do what a Tyro Adams or Weston McKinney can do. And I think also his age. By the time we reach the 20 22 World Cup, which I think is in 2023 now. Is he really going to physically be able to do that? Is it worth it to bring that locker room presence? This is another completely other episode, but I the point is, I agree with you. I think he lost his spot. I think that's Weston McKennie's, Tyler Adams, or even some of the players on the bench that we didn't get to see today. I think it's their roles. Let's move up the field. We had up top, our starting trio was Conrad De La Fuente on the left wing, Sebastian Legette as a striker, but playing more of that number nine role, and then Gio Reyna. Tell me some things that you liked about our forward line. Tell me some things that you didn't like.
I don't necessarily feel like it was an amazing game by them. Like I said, Gio Reyna, it was fun to see him play. I think he did have moments here and there. Like I said, he was still trying to figure out how to play a role in this team, knowing when to come in, right? Knowing when to stay out in the wing, knowing when to come to the ball. He was still like, there was moments where he was like all over the field, right? There was a moment where he was, instead of, you know, being on the right side of the field, he was in the center of the field trying to get the ball. So it did feel like he was playing like a number 10 role, right? And then I know they had the false nine kind of playing with Sebastian, but I don't necessarily feel like the forwards kind of stood out in this game, and because Sebastian wasn't, you know, plays more in that number 10 role, and he doesn't really play in the nine role as much. So I don't know if it was because of that. I do want to see a little bit of change to that going forward. That's pretty much what my take would be on that one.
Yeah, and I think that's a good shout. I think you see Sergiño Dest bombing up the right side of the field, and so you see Gio Reyna moving centrally as that number 10 to kind of give Dest space to play out wide. And I think that's one of the best things, but also one of the most frustrating things about Gio Reyna's game right now is he has a very undefined role at Borussia Dortmund, which is great because he's able to produce a solid amount of assists and score goals because he has the technical ability, he has the physical ability to perform as a number 10 that's really uncontested. I think he's over 6 foot. He's built like a grown man. As an 18-year-old player, so he can succeed in the number 10 role, but I do think that we need to see him more getting coaching from Greg Berhalter so that we know exactly what his position looks like, even if it's a free position. I think we saw Legette a lot of times pushing out wide and switching with Conrad De La Fuente as well to kind of give Reyna space to move inside, and I think Greg Berhalter made a very bold decision not starting an actual striker in the game. So on the bench, we had Nicolas Giochini, who plays for Ligue 2 side Cannes. I don't know how to pronounce their name, but he was a forward who was actually had the jersey number 9 on the game, didn't start. We also had Sebastian Soto, number 19, playing at Telstar in the Dutch league, Dutch second division. So we had, and Timothy Weah, number 23. All of these are players, Giochini and Timothy Weah both got on the field, but Berhalter made a big decision to not start an actual forward. And I think that was a mistake. I think he sees Sebastian Legette as a leader, one of the only players not playing for a European team who got called into camp. And I think Berhalter kind of forced it, you know, because I think he wanted McKennie and Adams to play, but he also wanted Legette to play as the player, as the experienced 28-year-old player to come in. And I think he made a mistake playing him as the false nine.
I totally agree. And I do want to see a change in that position. I want to see, because look, the midfield played so well. I mean, with Sergiño Dest coming up from the right side and putting, crosses from the right side, and just creating, you know, and nobody there to kind of finish it off for him. Even with him and McKennie playing together on that right side, and McKennie putting the ball in, there was just nobody there to put that in the net. So hopefully the next game we can see some better forward play from, you know, the bench players that come in.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I agree with all that. I think just to wrap up the lineup, I think Conrad De La Fuente had a very mixed game. He had a lot of chances where he was able to beat his man. And he had, in the first half, a chance to get inside the box when he was actually switched over to the right side of play. He took a bad first touch, had a favorable bounce, and then in the penalty box, skies a shot. And I thought he at least should have had it on target. I thought Conrad had a pretty mixed game, legit with a mixed game. Gio Reyna, I think he looked a lot more solid than the two. But how would you, what ratings would you give to this starting 11?
The whole starting 11, I would. So the funny part, I was watching the post game, and Alexi Lalas was like, he gave a 6 out of 10 for this whole game, and he had his reasons, yeah. And I'm not saying that I disagree with him, but I feel like it was a little bit close to 8. I came, and that's my opinion. I came into this game looking for again, chemistry, how well they play together, you know, the pretty much the confidence that they have in each other, right? Confidence that they can play with anybody, and a little bit of swagger, right? And they had that, and and for me, that's why I feel like it was a little bit closer to 8 for me. But I don't know, what would you say for you, what it was?
Yeah, I think swagger is a great way to describe the way that we play. I mean, we looked so comfortable in possession, playing one touch, two touch, tiki taka football. I mean, we did not look like we were breaking a sweat doing it. I think we could have done a better job at breaking down Wales. I think they set up very solidly defensively. I would have liked to see potentially Gio Reyna more in the midfield, playing as that number 10 who could kind of, you know, break up a solid mid block that the Wales national team set up in. I'd probably give us a 7 overall in the game. I thought we had a really good game. I thought Dest was an 8 out of 10 player. I thought John Brooks was an 8 out of 10 player in the game. I thought Zach Steffen was a solid 6. He didn't have much to do. I give Yunus Musa an 8 out of 10. But then you do have players who I personally like. Anthony Robinson, I would give him a 5 out of 10 in the game. I think overall he had an okay game. Miazga, probably a 6 out of 10. Legette, I don't want to rate. I mean, I'd probably give him a 5, but at the same time, he is not a number 9. And so I think he did the absolute best he could do with the skill set that he had in the game. Conrad De La Fuente, I'd probably give a 6. He popped up in the right positions. He wasn't able to finish off on a lot of things. And I think Dest is a 10 out of 10 player. If one of our forwards does finish one of the many crosses he puts into the box, I mean, because you could see that guy was tearing it up. He had the skills, the step overs. He had the speed and the pace. He was playing balls inside in half spaces so that the midfield could pick it up. Great player. But yeah, I think overall, I'd probably give the USA a 7 or an 8.
Yeah, you know, just going back to Brooks, I think if they, you know, if they attack more and he gets a chance off the corners, you know, I think he can be one of those players that, I mean, he's super tall, right? So he can be one of those players that can come and score a goal for US. I feel like he's perfect position. He's a perfect player for that position.
Yeah. We didn't really talk about a lot of the subs during this game. And I think that's because I think Berhalter made subs very late in the game. I think he wanted to give this chance a team to go out and play. So you had Timothy Weah come off the bench, Ulianes, Reggie Cannon, Johnny Cardoso, who plays for Internacional in Brazil, Owen Odosowi coming from the Wolves Academy, had a midfielder, and then Nicolas Giacchini, a number 9, playing in France. But they didn't get more than 20 minutes of game time. So, what's something that you're looking for in the Panama
again,
game?
Again, for me, it has to be with the forward. It has to be at least put in a true forward. Let's see how this team plays with them. I want Chris Richards from Bayern Munich to come and play either on that left.
Yeah.
I think he's probably going to be on the right side and put Dest on the left side. I want to see that how them moving the ball up from the back helps with the midfield. But I want the midfield to stay where it's at with Tyler Adams, Musa, and McKennie. And then I want Gio to stay. I mean, he's definitely going to stay in that lineup. There's no way they're taking that kid out. I do want to see that in the Panama game. But yeah, I want to see the chemistry. I want this chemistry to keep building. They have more days to practice with each other. It's going to be more physical game, right? Panama is not going to hold back like how Wales was doing, right? To me, it didn't feel like Wales was pressing as much, right? When they lose the ball, they weren't pressing how the US were pressing. I feel like Panama is going to attack them. And it's going to be a fun game. These are young players who are going to be aggressively attacked, and I want to see how they react in that game.
Yeah, absolutely. Now that we as fans have seen that the USA can play possession soccer against teams, that's my expectation against the Panama game. I'm holding them now to the standard that they are able to play possession soccer and play out of the back, at least somewhat successfully. And so I'm also, like you, looking for a forward to play. I personally want to see Timothy Weah starting or at least playing in one of the forward roles, whether that's on the left, on the right, or on the center. And a couple other players that I'm looking for. I'm looking for Chris Richards. He is the one player in this camp, in these two games, that I was really looking to see something out of. We didn't see him in the first game against Wales, but I mean, he started multiple games for Bayern Munich this season at center back and on the right. So I am looking to see how he does against a Panamanian team who's not going to want to give him a lot of time on the ball, going to try to knock him off the ball. And then the two other players I'm looking for, I want Ethan Horvath to start because I want to see what he can do against not only a CONCACAF team, but I want to see what he can do on the international stage, a player who hasn't played a lot in the past year. And then the last player is Ulianas. I think this is a kid from, Southern California who has the chops, who was developed in the Chivas USA LA Galaxy Academy and has what it takes, I believe, to succeed in Europe. I want to see how he stacks up against a team where, he's a flair player, but he's going up against a Panama team who doesn't really care about flair. They're going to knock you off the ball before they try to go for the ball. So I'm looking for those players to see what they're going to do.
Yeah, man. So hopefully that game turns out as good as this one. And how much we enjoyed this one. So anything else you want to kind of add?
No, I think we covered it. I think it was a great game. I think we were finally just all happy to see the USA play, and to see them play well was just a bonus. Definitely. Well, all right, guys. Thank you, guys. Thank you, listeners, for joining in to the first episode of the Samba Soccer Podcast. We'll be reviewing the Panama game next time and talking a bit more about players overall in the U.S. national team pool and kind of where we see the team going from here. So take care, guys. We'll talk to you next time.